Welcome. To Dissident Science. Where critical thinking meets the mainstream. I'm your host, David DeHilsterver. Our topic for today, why mainstream science is stuck in La La Land. I'm David DeHilster, I'm your host, and it is quite an interesting question. Often when I talk to people about dissident science, one of the biggest questions I get, well, wait, hold on. Why are all these scientists going off in different directions when we have science, we have mainstream, we have agreement, we have thousands and thousands of universities and millions of scientists who all know the truth. They've tested it hundreds of times, thousands of times, millions of times in the case of particle accelerators. And how could all of this be wrong? I mean, that just doesn't make sense. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Over 20 years I've been involved in the dissident science world, I've been thinking about that. The two things I think that are very interesting are what makes the mainstream continue to believe in and live in La La Land, and while what the other question is, what makes up a dissident scientist, those scientists, those thousands of scientists who break away and say, no, this is La La Land, let's take a look at what's gone wrong and what we can do to go forward. So today, I'm not going to talk about so much the second part, but the first part of why are we stuck in La La Land? And that's a question I get, like I said, often from people who know I'm involved with sort of dissident science, and that's the first question. They can't even get to me talking about plate expansion tectonics or the Big Bang is not right and eternal universe is okay and that's really what's happening, relativity is wrong, different alternatives to gravity and the world, the universe, the model of the universe. And so we have to get past that point. And those of you listening to this program for the first time, Dissident Science, you're not going to be listening to anything I say if, in fact, you can get over that first hump. Why is it that way? Why is it we actually in the last 115 years or 110 years, why are we in La La Land? Why do physicists still believe in the Big Bang and black holes and relativity and plate tectonics? What is wrong with the world? How could all those people be wrong and a few be right? Well, first of all, we know change comes from the outside. It never comes with inside, and that's because people get stuck in their ways. But let's talk about how it continues and how it does get stuck. I think the theme of this whole endeavor and what I've come up with as a conclusion is that nerds want to be loved. Now, that seems a strange answer to the question of why are we stuck in the land of La La, or the unicorn world, as I call it. And that comes from the fact that the people who permeate that arena, astrophysicists, theoretical physicists, all those kind, are in fact nerds. And I can talk about this because I myself am a nerd. Don't know if I'm proud of it. It's just who I am. It's something that I've lived with all my life. I suffered a lot for it as well. And that's really the reason why physics is in a mess. Now, again, we're not talking about scientifically what any theory is. We're talking about when a student gets to a point when they're learning the current mainstream theories out there. What is it that they that keeps them from, when they ask the questions, the real good questions, the ones that challenge what they're hearing because it doesn't make sense? What makes them eventually capitulate and go forward? And actually perpetuate the story? Well, let me go back to my own childhood and give you a little bit of insight. In the seventh grade, I grew up in a small town in Ohio, and at the sixth grade, between sixth and seventh grade, I moved. I was a bright student. I was considered, I guess, a nerd by a lot of people, and I had glasses. And when I got to the seventh and eighth grade, I moved from a town where I grew up in to a place where I knew basically no one. And that's already a traumatic experience. But during the seventh and eighth grade, because I was skinny and I wasn't as tall as I am now, I got picked on a lot because of my glasses and my demeanor. I guess, I must have been nerdish like, and the bullies would literally beat up on me. I mean, I would go through halls of the middle school in Ohio, and they would beat on me. I mean, they'd hit me. I'd go by because I was a pacifist. I mean, a lot of intellectuals are not into beating up on people, so I just thought that was stupid. So if I go down a hall and someone would make fun of me, I would just ignore them. And I wouldn't get back at them, and they eventually knew there was nothing coming their way. So, I'd go down the hall, and the next thing, jeers would turn into hits. And, there were times where it hurt. I mean, it really hurt. They never hit me in the face or anything, but they did damage me, not physically, but mentally. And also, like I said, it physically hurt a lot. And I became introverted, more introverted on top of that. I had friends and who were sort of a little bit nerdy themselves. And, I was in the band. I did science projects, but I pretty much hung out by myself. And really, in my mind, I began to fantasize. I began to fantasize about that I was brilliant and these people were idiots and someday I'd show them. Dream about winning a Nobel Prize or coming up with a great theory. And of course, I had none of those things. But what I did have was a great anger and a need for revenge. And I don't think my story is at all unique. If we look at the film industry, nerds are on TV. Nerds are always part of the picture because they're probably 10% of the population, at least in school. And so they're there, they need them desperately in film and on TV to do those nerdy things other people don't do and that's when people do recognize their brilliance, but that's just a flash in the moment, which the rest of the time is spent making fun of their inability to socialize, their not knowing what to say in social situations, not being able to date both boys and girls. And the stereotype is constantly thrown upon us. So we, believe this, we do this. And so that's something that gets instilled into these brilliant minds at an early age. And at that point, I wasn't as always interested in just what I read or what I did or experiments I did, like the science fair, I got first prize, all those things. I did those things. But deep down inside, the real drive for me was an emotional side that really dug deep. And it's because of that where I think science has gone wrong for the last 100 or so years. Now, one of the other things that I want to talk about today is what I call sort of capitulation. And that's, you know, why if we have things we don't believe correct when we first hear them eventually, and we don't get explanations that ever satisfy ourselves, how do we capitulate? And how does that get, where do we get to the point, the nerds get to the point where they say, no, okay, I get it, even though they don't get it. Well, let me relay one more story here before our first break. This one going back to elementary school, maybe fourth or fifth grade. And I was during recess, and a group of kids came up to me, probably about four or five or six or more, and they all came my direction with these sort of grins on their face. You know, something was up. I wasn't picked on in the elementary school as much. I was much more in, so I wasn't really a victim too much in elementary school, because, you know, at that point, you don't get that nerdy stuff going on at that time. But this is something I remember. It's the joke, and it sort of haunted me after I started to figure some of the stuff out with mainstream science. And that is, the joke goes like this. The kids come up to you in a group and they say, hey, you want to hear a joke? And of course, you're going to say, yeah, I want to hear a joke, because, you know, they're all your peers, and you're not going to say no, even though you feel that maybe there's something coming on. You're going to give in to the peer pressure. So sure, I'd like to hear a joke. So one of the kids, the main kid, says, okay, here's the joke. A polar bear goes down the slide and says, wee. A second polar bear goes down the slide and says, wee, I'm a radio. And then he immediately turns to you and says, get it? And everybody's looking at you. It's a lot of silence. They're putting a lot of pressure on you. And you're in my head, I'm thinking, there's nothing to get here. I don't understand this. If there's something to get, I am totally clueless. But because everyone's standing around, you're not going to want to say, I don't get it. That's more embarrassing than, you know, I take a chance and say, I get it. And that's what I did. I said, yeah, I get it. And the guy goes, ha ha, there's nothing to get. Everybody laughs, points at you, treats like you like an idiot, and goes on to their next victim. Now, this sounds, you know, like just a normal prank, but it's based on one important thing, and that is, peer pressure will trump anything, including truth. That is, you know the truth, that you know that there was nothing to get in that, but you're going to say yes because everyone is standing around you. Even myself, which was considered and always was a very good student, top student, the pressure was too great. And that's what happens. What happens is truth trumps, truth doesn't trump. I wish it was that way, but emotion trumps truth. And when we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit about that. And I'll talk a little bit about what I found in my documentary film, Einstein Wrong. You're listening to Dissident Science with David DeHilster. Interested in discussing science like you hear on the Dissident Science podcast with others in your area? Then think about starting a local natural philosophies meetup at meetup.com. And to make things easy, the Chappelle Natural Philosophy Society can provide slideshows, scientist interviews, and even screenings of dissident films to get your group going and discussing the latest the best scientific minds on the planet have to offer. Simply go to community.naturalphilosophy.org, click on Meetup, and you'll be on your way to find out how to start your local group. You can even generate your Meetup banner online instantly on their website. So get back to stimulating scientific discussion about real science with like minds, and you will soon find that science is fun again. This is David DeHilster, and we're back in our second part of three parts on today's topic, and that is, what in the heck is mainstream doing in La La Land, and why do they continue to be in La La Land? And I was mentioning before how it is that people come to these decisions of how to let problems go and accept them and move on. And I have a couple stories I'd like to relate to you. One is the in my film, Einstein Wrong, The Miracle Year, in 2005, I shot some scenes at Poly High in Long Beach. Long Beach, Poly High is known for its great football players, but also great academics. And this was the advanced physics class, and I interviewed sophomores, juniors, and seniors. The juniors seemed to be very gung-ho on, oh yeah, if I knew Einstein was wrong, I'd fight for it. I'd fight for what is right. The seniors, though, exhibited something very interesting, and that is they were already worried and knew about the politics of science. And about 50% of them said that they would forego truth to keep their position, to get into grad school or to get into undergrad school or to grad school or to be a professor. And that was quite shocking to me. I really didn't think that people, kids at that age would opt to say, okay, I don't buy all this, but I will bypass that and say I buy all that because it's more important for me to get my position in that college than it is for me to really seek scientific truth. So what I'm suggesting is that at a pretty early age, even before they get to college, that in fact these students are already playing the game of capitulating and saying, okay, yeah, of course I understand. And I've got a sort of to take us to a step further that's sort of based on some experiences I've had, my father, other people have had in college, and that is, let's go to undergrad physics 101. And in that, we're going to find two students. One's going to be a physics student, one guy who's wanting to be the next Einstein, and right next to him is an engineering student. And that person's just interested in engineering. They have to take physics, so they take it. And the class being taught on this day is special relativity, Einstein's special relativity. For those who don't know what that is, special relativity has three predictions. One, as you go closer to the speed of light, mass increases. Two, length contracts. And three, time slows down. And so you have this, often used as the twins paradox, where you have one twin staying on Earth, another getting in a spaceship going very close to the speed of light, traveling away from the Earth, and then coming back and finding that the twin on the spaceship has aged less than the twin at home. Now, of course, this seems like a paradox, but as in my film, the scientists at the Stanford Linear Accelerator, or SLAC Linear Accelerator, it is the Stanford Linear Accelerator, said is that, well, you can't apply special relativity in that case. In fact, they try to apply general relativity. But of course, the explanations, there are two things in this special relativity of Einstein's that are notable. One are the paradoxes it brings up and contradictions. And number two, what actually causes these things to happen. And so if we take the two students sitting there in class, we'll take the engineering student first. He's listening to this and he's going, this is a bunch of baloney. I mean, just because I'm going close to the speed of light, time is slowing down, length contracts. Well, maybe that because I'm being squashed, because I'm being accelerated against something, perhaps. And then mass increases. I'm getting heavier. And the first question that student has is, well, what is the mechanism behind that? What is the mechanism behind me going close to the speed of light and the reason for my mass increase? You know, I'm thinking, well, that is not making any common sense. And what is the mechanism behind it? That's what the engineering student is thinking. Now, of course, he's not going to raise his hand because he's sitting in a classroom, and many of the students are there. Einstein's a god. He's looked up to by the whole world as some giant genius. And so the physics student sitting next to him is listening. And this is what is going on in his mind. And this is what I'm conjecturing. He also has a lot of the same questions. The difference, though, is even though the same paradoxes and problems come up, even though he questions in his mind why those things happen, perhaps, he is already predisposed to think, okay, listen, I am going to learn all these equations. I'm going to learn the explanations for the paradoxes themselves, their explanations, and be able to cite them back because I want to be the next Einstein. I want to be the next astrophysicist that's famous, that comes up and gets the Nobel Prize. And so they are already predisposed. They do not question it. They say to themselves, I am going to learn these explanations. I'm going to learn how to explain these paradoxes. And they go through these, in fact, the rote lessons that they are given, and they regurgitate them back. And of course, the engineer sitting in the same classroom is thinking, you know, a lot differently, but he also regurgitates everything because he doesn't care. He's basically saying, this is a bunch of baloney. Theoretical physics is not for me. These people are in la-la land. I'd rather do something real in the real world. So I'll go and do this stuff, and I don't care. I'm not going to fight it because, forget it, it's too hard to fight. So that is quite a change. I mean, that is quite a difference between the physics student who is looking to be a theoretical physicist and the engineering student who just doesn't buy this theoretical mumbo jumbo. And so what you have there are actually two sets of people. Maybe they both doubt it. Maybe they both have problems with it. But they are going to both do their lessons. They're going to repeat what is told to them. And they're going to write that down on their test and basically keep repeating the story. And that comes to really a real problem that we have in science. And that comes to the journalists who have the same problem, the documentary filmmakers who have the same problem. And in the documentary movie Particle Fever, where they are looking at the Higgs particle, I don't think, unless I haven't seen the movie, and they may touch upon this, but I don't think it was ever the intention of the documentarian to question the Higgs particle. He may do it in, how do you say, dramatic form, but they don't check it. They don't believe that the Higgs doesn't really exist or question that. What they're really doing is they're looking at the journey. And these people, the documentarians and the authors who are more or less in bed with the mainstream, meaning they are all social intellects and they believe in what's being done. And they are the ones who say, I am smarter than the average person. I can read what they say about special relativity and the Higgs particle and general relativity and black holes and all that. And I can come back and tell everybody what's going on and explain to them what is happening and explain the recipe. That is, I don't question whether or not these people are telling the truth, whether data really backs that up, whether their assumptions are not paradoxical, meaning they make sense. So we don't check their assumptions to make sure those are okay before you start, because if those are wrong, you can't be right. Number two, they don't check to see if things fit the data. And number three, they're not even looking necessarily at the logic of it. They try to build up a little bit of logic from what they're being told, and they go forward with it. Authors such as Margaret Wortham with Physics on the Fringe, or you get the Particle Fever, the documentarian who did that documentary, they're more interested in looking smart. Like, oh, I'm going to go into these amazing realms and really show them that I understand mainstream physics. In the case of Margaret Wortham, though, she's going in there to try to show that the dissidents are, they love physics, but they don't know what they're talking about because we're not doing a good enough job of explaining this complicated thing. And that really is the joke. When it goes full circle back to the joke of the two polar bears, Margaret Wortham is very good at that. And what we sat in on one of her panels at UCLA during a book fair there. My mother was there, my father and myself, and my mother went livid when she was listening to Margaret Wortham making these statements. And these statements had to do with that she made a story about how dissident physics, why it exists, and what the problem is. And instead of saying, well, the dissident scientists are independently finding these problems, they're not coming together and making these things up. We have thousands of scientists around the world coming with the same conclusions of the problems. Instead of saying that that's what's happening, that these physicists, these scientists are together because mainstream, they feel mainstream is really off. Their assumptions and the basic problems, the assumptions with mainstream are wrong. She's saying that they love science and that they can't understand the complexities of modern theoretical physics and cosmology. And therefore, they, because they're in their desperation, they love science so much that they come up with their own little pet theories to try to explain these complicated things. And she says the problem is that we're obviously not doing a good job at explaining these things. So what happens is not only are they living in la-la land and these well-known authors and documentarians go out there and cover this stuff, but they never question whether or not the assumptions, the data fit, the assumptions are right, the data fits, and that the explanations therefore are logical. They don't check that. They just try to learn and repeat on the radio, on TV, in books, in film, what they've been told. And we hear the stories over and over. We have the physics evangelists on TV constantly bombarding us with their, oh, they're called when something like the Higgs particle comes up to be able to explain something. So we are in a conundrum, we are in a problem, but again, it has to do with these intellectuals who by some reason and some measures of being picked on in their lives, perhaps, that they want to be perceived as very smart. And I call them, I coined the term social intellect, meaning it's not really people who are smart, it's people who want to appear smart socially. And that's what these people want to do. And they will repeat recipes that are paradoxical and full of problems because they know they have the numbers on their side. That, well, are all the physicists and all the scientists and all the universities wrong and this small group of scientists in the CNPS right? I mean, that's a laugh. But in reality, that's how all paradigm shifts work. People inside can't get past the problems and get stuck, and then people from the outside are the ones to break us free. Well, we'll be back with the third part of our dissident talk today, which is why in the heck is mainstream stuck in La La Land? We'll be right back. Saturday morning science lectures are found through the CNPS website at www.naturalphilosophy.org. The latest work from brilliant scientists from around the world can be found talking about the latest in gravity, relativity, structures, expansion tectonics, and of course, natural philosophy. Join them Saturday mornings via Fuse video conferences on your PC, your Mac, your tablet, or even by phone. Hope to see you Saturday morning for stimulating science discussion at www.naturalphilosophy.org. We're back on the final part of our talk today on why the mainstream is stuck in La La Land. I make this analogy. I have a couple of analogies when I talk with people, especially when they're interested in my documentary, and they say, well, Einstein's wrong. And then I start talking about all the problems in mainstream physics. Well, they immediately have some perceptions about things that I constantly am dealing with. And a couple of them are very interesting. Number one, they respond when I even say there are problems. They say, well, we understand. I mean, there are going to be problems. There are always problems in theoretical science or physics or cosmology. And when these problems come up, well, everyone takes a look at them, does experiments, says whatever, and they solve the problem, they find the problems, they solve it, and maybe even throw everything out and start over. So I'm not too worried about it. They'll solve it. And of course, that's not what happens. I explained to them, I said, there are a couple of things, and nerds want to be loved is part of it. But I start out by saying, okay, this is what's happening in the theoretical physics and cosmology universe. We have a lot of people, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people studying migration patterns, digestive system, DNA, the mating habits, the internal organs, the brain, and all of these things, color, texture, all of these intricacies of unicorns. Now, there's only one problem, and obviously using the word unicorn, I don't have to even say it to the average person. They go, yeah, I know, unicorns don't exist. And I said, exactly. It's very possible, and it happens, and it's happened in history before, that people talk in a world that doesn't exist. I mean, we had scientists talking about a flat earth for a very, very long time, and that's the way things worked. We had painters and people who were doing art without perspective. They couldn't take the 3D world with the rectilinear lines and properly project that onto a two-dimensional plane. And so we just, we were living in a different world, and everything was different at that time. Eventually, things change. We have Harry Potter. People love Harry Potter. Millions, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people around the world have read Harry Potter. They're fascinated by the world he lives in. But we all know that's a fantasy world, although it's very intricate. Movie makers make those worlds. The writer writes those worlds. And we read those worlds, imagining what those things are in our head. And we can believe it, what we call suspend our real-world belief to live in those alternative worlds. And that's what pretty much physics and cosmology are doing. They have created assumptions about the universe that have led them to create these magical worlds that are, in fact, mathematical. And it really stems back to Einstein. And the reason we, in the dissonant world, talk about Einstein, because Einstein was really one of the first theories, if not the first theory, where theory came first and backup of the theory came second. He became very famous in 1919 after Eddington went down to Brazil and watched an eclipse. And in that eclipse, he supposedly showed that light was bending. Gravity was bending light. And that was a huge coup for Einstein, because he had made that prediction. Of course, Nature magazine, I think in 2009, around then, said, in fact, that data was not very good, but that doesn't matter because it's been proven afterwards. But in reality, what really was happening is a very dangerous precedence that was set by Einstein. In fact, in my movie, in the song, we'll be talking to the composer of my documentary Einstein Wrong. Einstein has a very telling saying. He has lots of sayings that you always hear about, and one of them is the most fascinating to me, and that is, he said, if the facts don't fit the theory, then change the facts. What he's really saying is, my theory, I am such a powerful being, we humans know so much now, and I'm a genius, that I have figured out the way the universe works, and this is the way it works. And if we're trying to find the data and it doesn't fit, it's because the data's wrong. That is, we're not getting it. We're going to keep doing things until we find it, that Einstein's theory is right. And that's the way the 20th century science and theoreticians worked. And in fact, that's one of the strangest things for everybody listening. Remember this. Every time you hear another experiment to show Einstein is right, why are we doing that 100 years later after he supposedly was shown right? We don't hear like, we have now proven Newton correct. Velocity equals distance times time. Over time. And that is now proven again. We don't do that. And I think it's a symptomatic problem that Einstein is always questioned. And the mainstream says Einstein's questioned because dissidents want to be Einstein. And there was something my analyst told me, and a lot of analysts tell their patients, what is that? What you prescribe or say that a person is thinking and doing in their heads, that is, we know that the mainstream says this, we know that dissidents want to be the next Einstein. They're just, you know, little Napoleons wanting to be famous. Well, it's true. What analysts and psychologists often say is that we project ourselves onto others. And that is, no, that's what social intellects want to do. When I was in seventh and eighth grade and people were beating on me, I really did have fantasies about becoming a very famous and brilliant scientist. And it wasn't because I wanted to do great things. It really wasn't. It was to show everyone else that I was really important, and so that they can't pick on me. They have to respect me. And that's what these scientists want. So they're assuming that all these dissidents are wanting to do that. And in fact, they're not. They are very, very adamant of trying to get other people to look at their theory. They're not doing that to be famous. They said, well, I have discovered something. Listen to me. But people like Margaret Wortham, in her book Physics on the Fringe, she literally has been quoted on Wikipedia that the MPA, now the CMPS, are full of Jesus Christ. They're all wanting to be the saviors. And that's not true. What they're trying to do is find truth, and that the mainstream, when they do in fact say those things, they're projecting what they really think. And so therefore, we have these students, we have professors, we have scientists, and we have the physics evangelists on TV, all teaching us interpretation of data. Well, we have the data and we've interpreted, so you learn our interpretation. Don't go back and check it because it's a waste of time. We know we're right. And that's the problem. What we in journalism do, documentarians do, authors do, all the news people do, is all we do is, and they say, according to so-and-so, they have shown Einstein right again. And therein lies the problem. We're all perpetuating it. And my final point here today on this whole mess, that nerds want to be loved, and that's the reason we continue to perpetuate bad science, because of really two things. Nerds want to be loved, and the atomic bomb that gave people this power. And that finally, we have to start looking at ourselves and saying, is it our problem that we make these very brilliant minds, when they're young, feel ostracized? We repeat these kinds of things on film and in TV programs. My daughter watches Disney Channel, and on the Disney Channel, you see all the nerds. They all always come to the rescue because we need them technologically, because the average person doesn't understand a lot of this stuff. But the problem is that we create an environment where these kids are beat up. They're feeling emotionally beat up. They're treated as socially inept. They're treated like social morons, really. And because of that, we're instilling upon them this an emotional state that makes them want to have revenge, the revenge of the nerds, because they are thinking, I'm going to be really smart and show them. They don't care whether or not they are smart because of the truth. They care that they have the perception of being smart. And that is where why I call them social intellects, because they have lost really all ability to look at real truth. One telltale sign is when I see these child geniuses, you always hear them saying, oh, I am, there's a child genius in India. Another one was in Europe. And they always seem to go after Einstein. I've been studying Einstein, which makes them, of course, super brilliant. And I'm going to see if there's some type of problem. And then when they start talking about it, they don't talk about the real problems of relativity, that we don't see mass increase in particle accelerators, which would blow it apart. They are talking about, the unicorn world. And then they get in the unicorn world, they learn that unicorn world and all its rules, and it's a rule system. They have their own rule system, and they get into that, and then they perpetuate that. So instead of sitting back and saying, wait, these things are based upon things that are wrong, the assumptions are wrong, we have to start over. Even the kid genius is out there, they immediately get into the unicorn world and start to try to look at things. The moment they would say anything is a bad assumption or the basis for this thing is wrong, then we would say, okay, I guess he's not so brilliant. He isn't a child genius. But we, in fact, as a society, are to blame. We treat these young minds and make them emotionally disturbed, basically, and they go on to perpetuate. And because they have the atomic bomb, the money behind that, and every country is afraid of not having that power, money continues to be handed to them. They continue to live in the unicorn world, and we continue to be stuck. And thank goodness for groups like the CNPS, where these physics professors, astronomers, NASA scientists, engineers, and very brilliant laymen are saying, no, let's look at the assumptions, let's look at the problems, let's fix them and see where we go. And you get an incredibly new view of the world and the universe, and we can finally move science forward. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast on why we are stuck in La La Land in the mainstream. We will be having more podcasts with some of these great scientists coming up, and we hope you visit frequently and listen to our podcast on dissident science, and enjoy the day, enjoy your time, and think about what we've talked about here today, and I hope to see you back on other episodes. Good day.
You are listening to the Dissident Science Podcast, where critical thinking meets mainstream theory head on. Be sure to check out our latest podcast at www.dissidentscience.com.
Oh, come on outside, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. What you're about to see is out of